Welcome to the world today. My name is Frank Weltner. I am the librarian for JewWatch, the largest compendium of information about Jewish organizations and news on the internet today. In addition, I am the librarian and archivist for a new website, www.americanussr.com, which is already the largest compendium of history concerning the negative aspects of the United States of America, which the CIA, FBI, the presidency, the Congress, and all other agencies of the United States want you to know nothing about. Welcome to the world today. My name is Frank Weltner, and today is January the 10th, 2011. Today I have news to bring to you concerning Jared Loughner, who has been reported in the Jewish minority-owned presses all across the country as a racist white man. Almost every newspaper and news studio is repeating over and over again that Loughner was a twisted racist who read Mein Kampf by Adolf Hitler. They also noticed that he read Aesop's Fables, but they haven't mentioned that too much. But they keep coming back to Hitler, and they keep coming back to racism among white people. Again and again and again, Loughner, racist, Loughner, white person. So they are defaming the majority people in the United States with their descriptions of Jared Loughner, the person who shot Miss Griffiths, the congresswoman, Gabrielle Griffiths. And I thought from the very beginning, from looking at his picture, that he was probably Jewish. And I began looking at the articles in the internet. And I found one from Mother Jones, which is a fairly trusted news source. And it was the first one that I found, and the only one so far that I found, that mentions this particular supposition that he's probably Jewish. And it doesn't really just mention it. It quotes his best friend as saying that Jared's mother was Jewish. Now, if this is true, other people who have quoted this have pointed out that not only is she Jewish, but she and Miss Griffiths attended the same synagogue together, as did Jared. So, I'm not saying that this is absolutely true, because I need to get some other sources for this. But think about it. You have a person here who has been quoted as Jewish in a bona fide news source, Mother Jones. And here's what Mother Jones has to say about Jared. Jared's best friend was a young man named Tierney. It says Tierney believes that Loughner was very interested in pushing people's buttons, and that may have been why he listed Hitler's Mein Kampf as one of his favorite books on his YouTube page. Loughner's mom is Jewish, according to Tierney. So there's the statement. Loughner's mom is Jewish, according to Tierney, his best friend. Loughner sometimes approached strangers and would say weird things, Tierney recalls. He would do it because he thought people were below him and he knew they wouldn't know what he was talking about. In college, Loughner became increasingly intrigued with lucid dreaming and he grew convinced that he could control his dreams, according to Tierney. In a series of rambling videos posted to his YouTube page, dreams are a frequent topic. In a video posted on December 15th, Loughner writes, "My favorite activity is conscience dreaming, the greatest inspiration for my political business information. Some of you don't dream, sadly." In another video, he writes, "The population of dreamers in the United States of America is less than 5%. Later in the same video, he says, "I'm a sleepwalker who turns off the alarm clock." Loughner believed that dreams could be a sort of alternative matrix-style reality. So we have to wonder why the mainstream media hasn't confirmed or denied what has been printed in quoting Jared's best friend Tierney in Mother Jones. Why haven't they mentioned this? Is it because they're having too much fun berailing white people in print, saying that this is just another sick white person, another mentally ill, typical American white male who's a racist, and the usual stereotype that these Jewish media like to say about white males in America? You would think that all of us were racist pigs, that we all read Adolf Hitler, that we were all polishing our guns to run around and maybe kill Jews, which I don't think is true at all. The white people I know certainly would probably protect Jews if other whites were trying to kill them. I'm sure most of them would. Nonetheless, the Jewish media loves to berate the white people of this country. They hate the white people of this country. And the fact that they are berating the white people and saying that Loeffner is one of them, and not mentioning that he's Jewish and that his mother was Jewish, according to his best friend, says quite a bit about the minority-owned media and how dangerous it is for the American people to allow 2% of the people in this country, the 2% that started the Soviet Union, the 2% that invented communism, the 2% that has constantly brought disruptive ideas that were untrue into our civilization, including the theories of Sigmund Freud. Sigmund Freud was a cokehead, and he wrote wonderful essays about mythology, such as the Oedipus complex, and said that this complex was inside of most people. Today, Freud is considered an idiot, someone who was intellectual but who went way over the wall. And the reason he went over the wall was that he was a cokehead. Every day of his life, he would snort coke, day after day, hour by hour, and this affected his ability to think in a professional manner. It helped him to speed up his mind and become manic, which helped him to say more and more bizarre things. But the Jewish-owned press around the world loved Freud because he was one of them. He was Jewish. And what he was saying were things that were totally disruptive of Christendom in the Western world, which the Jews hated. The Jews hate Christendom, which is one of the reasons why they hate white people, is that white people are Christian, and they don't like Christians. They've never liked Christians. They've considered Christians to be liars who believe in a God that was Jewish and in a manner which is anti-Semitic and which reflects poorly upon them as the killers of Christ in the Bible. So here's Loeffner, who kills a Jew, and they immediately start saying that he's a white man, and now along comes an interview, the first interview I've seen with anyone who knew Loeffner, and what does he say right off the bat? That Loeffner's mother was Jewish. Now, the synagogue where Loeffner's mother went and where Loeffner himself went has a rabbi there. I'm sure that she's getting hundreds of phone calls every day about this because Miss Giffords went there also. The congresswoman who was shot by Jared goes to the same synagogue. But she has never once mentioned that Jared's mother is Jewish and goes to the synagogue. Did she go to the synagogue? Is she Jewish? These are concepts that must be explicated in the press. That we must determine whether this is true or not true, because if this is true, this means that the Jewish press is up to its old tricks of trying to hide Jewish facts from us that might make Jews look bad. And evidently they feel that if Loeffner's mother was Jewish, which means under Jewish law, Loeffner would be Jewish, because the only way you can be Jewish is if your mother's Jewish or if you convert. If his mother's Jewish and the press knows it and they're hiding that from us, then it's proof positive that the press is, believe it or not, and you're going to say, well, this may be jumping to conclusions, but the only conclusion I can jump to is that it's dangerous to allow the Judeo-Bolsheviks to own 95% of the press, that this is a constant threat to our nation, a constant threat to our people. And for them to hide that Loeffner's Jewish, if indeed he is proof positive that they need to have the press taken from their hands. Their lying hands, their lying mouths, their lying typewriters, they need to be removed from these properties. And the fact that 2% of a country, and the communist 2% who live in New York and who brush up against the communists of Brighton Beach, who have just newly arrived again from Russia, and sitting there smoking Russian cigarettes and talking in Russian in Brighton Beach, New York, laughing about how they killed so many Christians there and got by with it. The fact that the news media doesn't really approach this very much, and they hide things such as Loeffner being Jewish. And as I told you before, one of the reasons I suspected him was that several people who were involved in massacres were Jewish. For instance, Liebold, the massacre person at Columbine was Jewish, and his grandfather was one of the largest philanthropists in Ohio for Jewish causes. And but no one wanted to mention it. Finally, it came out, but it hasn't been dwelt upon, but I think it should be. In Paducah, Kentucky, I believe it was, there were some killings, and that person was Jewish, and there were three or four other ones as well. And when you consider how few of these have taken place, the fact that so many of these kids were Jewish makes us ask what is going on in Jewish people that they would have so much hatred in their heart for their white students in their schools. Is it racism against us that causes them to want to kill us? Because there seems to be a real problem here. Because when you have 2% perpetrating approximately 50% of the killings in these schools, Columbine-type killings, and this one here, there's something wrong here that needs to be looked at. And I can assure you that if it were white people in the Ku Klux Klan, they'd certainly do their investigations, and they would do them very solidly. But the moment their own tribe comes up, their communist tribe, the communist New York tribes of the Bolshevik bankers, of the great banks of America that funded the Soviet Union and ran it as a Christian killing field, where one Christian after another was lined up and assassinated for 20 years. The fact that they hid that, the fact that they, you know, if this is true, that they're hiding this about Loeffner, when are we going to wise up and remove the ownership of presses, banks, corporations, and prestigious appointments at universities from these people, so that we can isolate ourselves from what is a vast danger to our nation? Because these are the people that are running our government, paying for our congressmen to be elected, and expecting them to fund every Jewish war against Arabs in the Middle East for them. Something that is costing you and myself trillions of dollars. And they're also the people who destroyed the world's economy. And George Soros is still out there playing Dr. Flake with the money system of all these different countries. We need to have a better press than this. We need to have our government look into this and to cleanse itself of the influence of these seedy people who are causing us to go to war when it's totally against our national interest. It really upsets me to be the one that has to alert the American people of their continuous dangers that they're in from Jewish media. I remember that when Madeleine Albright was approved to be the Secretary of State, that in her lying resume she said that she was Episcopal. Which maybe wasn't a lie, because she was in Episcopal Church. However, I had information already from Reuters and from, I believe it was the Jerusalem Post in my computer, from 4 years before that she was Jewish. That her mom was Jewish, her dad was Jewish, they were ambassadors in Czechoslovakia, and when the Anschluss occurred and Hitler moved into Czechoslovakia, they moved to the Free Eastern side. And then they moved to Switzerland, and from there they made their way to America, where they told everybody that they were Episcopalians. Well, when Madeleine Albright, after she became the head of the United States delegation to the United Nations several years before, went to Prague to visit, a young lady showed up and said that she'd like to have lunch with Madeleine, and that she, just like Madeleine, was Jewish. And Madeleine says, "My dear, I'm not Jewish." And she refused to have a lunch with her. Well, most Jews knew that she was Jewish. And anybody looking at her could tell she was Jewish. I mean, just take a look at Madeleine Albright's features. She's definitely Jewish. Jewish people have a certain type of features. It's just almost like looking at a black person saying, "That person's not black," when it's pretty obvious to everybody's eyeballs that they're black. So you look at a Jewish face on a person like Madeleine Albright, and you can tell she's Jewish pretty much. She might not be, but she sure looks it. So I mean, why would she be surprised? So at any rate, that next day I was writing on the blog at the New York Times, and I may have told you this before. And if I did, just bear with me. And I said, "Well, I know that she's Jewish, and why does she say she's Episcopalian?" And the editor of at the blog there said, "How dare you? She's not Jewish. You know, prove she's Jewish." So I sent immediately to the blog the two articles from Reuters and from Jerusalem, in which these Jewish reporters investigated, found out she was indeed Jewish, that her mother and father were Jews in Czechoslovakia, came to America, converted to Episcopalianism for convenience and to get in easier, which is, in a way, almost somewhat similar to someone lying and saying that they weren't a guard at Auschwitz, because they did it for the same reason. They wanted to get inside the United States, and if they were Jews just before World War II, that might have been politically impossible. So they lied and said they were Christians, and then they picked the Episcopal Church. And they immediately had jobs working inside of the State Department. And being Jewish, they were obviously associated with many left-wing Judeo-Bolshevik people. And so they became another a little point of light inside of the State Department. They could report to Zionists and Bolsheviks all over the world what the State Department was doing. In other words, they could compromise the United States of America from their position there. It was a perfect position to spy at America from, especially for diplomats. They were diplomats, so they knew the lingo. They knew how much was going on. They knew who they could give information to that might be embarrassing to the United States. But being nice Bolshevik people, they wouldn't mind doing that if they could get by with it. So they were a danger to the United States, being red Bolsheviks. So that's why they hid it, and that's how they got into the country, was by hiding the fact that they were from the Judeo-Bolshevik race of people that were causing trouble all over Europe, including Germany and Czechoslovakia, trying to overthrow these Western Christian governments and then going on a Christian killing spree, as happened in Russia. So at any rate, she had lied about it. Within 1 day after I sent those two articles to, I sent them both to the, I sent them to the New York Times, the Washington Post, and then I sent some to the, sent the same articles to the Los Angeles Times. Within 2 days, both the Washington Post and the New York Times were fighting to see who was the first one to publish that she was Jewish, and they interviewed her. And they asked her about these articles, and she said, "Well, I had no idea I was Jewish." And then she said, "Well, I'm just kind of delighted to find out that I'm Jewish." So I wrote on the blog that next day, I said, "See, I told you she was Jewish." And they said, "Yeah, but she had no idea." And I said, "Are you kidding me? Have you taken a look at her face?" And I put a link up there, a picture of her face. And I said, And do you suppose that when she was the head of the United States delegation to the United Nations, that she wasn't reading the dossiers and profiles on every one of the politicians that she worked with up there? The ambassador from Russia, the assistant ambassador from Russia, the ambassador from England, the assistant ambassador from England, and all the people that worked inside their offices. Don't you know that she was reading all of their profiles? They showed what religion they were from and this and that. And don't you know that they were reading her profile and her dossier? And don't you know that every one of them knew she was Jewish because that was in her dossier? Because, you know, these people that do this kind of spy work in state departments, they know these things. And I asked, didn't she ever read her own dossier that these other people were reading? Who's she kidding? She knew damn well she was Jewish. And she was terrified that it might get out because she had lied so much about it during her entire life. Well, the long and short of it was, once she came forward and said, yes, I'm Jewish and I'm proud of it. But she lied and said, but I had no idea. What a liar. At any rate, then she went to Israel all the time and she would dance Jewish dances and she had a good time. The Israelis loved her and she loved them. And it turned out to be a very good thing for Madeleine Albright that I outed her in the New York Times. I did her a favor, ladies and gentlemen. I didn't hate Madeleine Albright, but I was disgusted at how she was hiding her Jewishness, and let me tell you why. Because in the Clinton administration, which elevated her, there were so many Jews, so many of them, that it was just, you know, it was ridiculous. And then in the Bush administration, before that, it was even worse. And then afterwards, it was worse. All those neocons that you heard about, those were Jewish people. They were red Bolsheviks in Republican garb. And at any rate, Madeleine Albright was a threat to this country because there were already so many Jews in the White House, in all of the agencies of the White House, all the departments. And the State Department's, you know, the most powerful. So to have all of these people spying from inside the United States and reporting to Israel on what we were doing made us just so totally transparent that we couldn't keep a secret no matter what. Everything we were doing was being written down and handed off to the Mossad so that they could control us in an iron fist of information that was very, very damaging to the decision-making capabilities of our nation. Because every extra Jewish person in the State Department, in the Department of Defense, all of these people with their spying eyes were telling everything that was going on in America to our, basically our enemy, who was Israel. Oh, I know you're going to say, oh, how could you say that Israel's our enemy? Well, isn't Israel our enemy? Wasn't it Israel that had 220 spies here in the United States, many of whom were following Arabs around, and who knew that they were going to, or claimed they knew that they were going to bomb these buildings on 9/11, and didn't tell us? Wasn't it the Jews that had the dancing Israelis celebrating and filming the destruction of the buildings in New York, and you saw that on television? Everybody did. The five dancing Israelis. And don't you remember that when Dan Rather was reporting what was going on at noon on 9/11 after the buildings came down, how two people were arrested on either side of George Washington Bridge, Jewish people in vans, and they had bombing materials, and they also had those razor blades with them that were used to take down those planes, those box cutters. And they were found on both ends of the bridge, on the overpasses, parked, and working hard inside their vans, doing God knows what. And you don't think these people are your enemy? They destroyed your economy. You just spent the trillions of dollars to save their banks. Why would you want to save their banks? Why didn't you let their banks fall? Why didn't you let the banks collapse and all of the rich Jews who had money in those banks? Not in the banks, but money and invested in stocks for those banks. lose all their money, like everybody else has to. Oh, look at the people of Enron. They lost their money. The people who had General Motors while it was crashing, they lost their money. The 401k people have lost their money. Is there a law against Jews losing their money when their banks gamble on products like petroleum and lose? Do they always get to come back to America and say, bail us out, we're Jews, we're special, we get special treatment, please give us our money back? And so you and I are supposed to go into debt because of bad business decisions by Jews in the banks? I say no. I say no, and any people who have that much power to come before Congress and to beg for money when their own decisions destroyed their businesses. This is the only time I know of, except in the Chrysler case years ago, where the government actually bailed somebody out when they were ready to go broke. I would have let these banks collapse, and that would have been the end of these Judeo-Bolsheviks overpowering our government in America. And they would have had to not only sell their banks at a complete loss, but the loans that they had taken out to buy the New York Times and the rest of whatever papers they owned that they had loans on in order to pay their payroll, they would have collapsed. They would have had to gone up for sale to the highest bidder. And since the Jewish banks weren't there, since the Federal Reserve would have been closed at that time, anybody would have been able to buy those properties, and this Jewish stranglehold on the press would have been ended. The Jewish stranglehold on business would have been ended. All those corporations would have been up for grabs for pennies on the dollar. And there would have been no banks whatsoever with a dime in them, including the Rothschild banks in Europe. They all would have crashed. They all would have been broke. So everybody would have had a chance to own a radio station or a piece of a TV station. And there would have been new voices, new concepts, new ideas. And history that has been closed off to people because it offended Jewish interests. These things would have suddenly been made clear to us by these publishers, these new publishers that were able to get a hold of these properties. But that was all destroyed by our Congress, which is paid off by the Jews, the Red Bolsheviks of New York, and they would rather support those communists who killed Christians in Russia, who were sitting there eating stuffed goose up at Brighton Beach, speaking Russian and laughing about it. They'd rather support them. Why? Because their campaigns are paid for by Jewish individuals who are billionaires. That's why. And the reason they support them is so that they can be represented to the detriment of all other people in this country. You and I have had our representation stolen from us by those who have corrupted our congressmen and our senators and our presidents by paying for their campaigns, giving them huge sums, millions of dollars. And something needs to be done about it if we're ever to have our country back. That's the reason why America's failing, was because in 1913 the Federal Reserve System was passed on Christmas Eve when most of the people couldn't even get to Congress. And so without a proper quorum it was passed. And these thieves, these Jewish thieves, have been stealing from us ever since. They've been creating fake, phony paper money out of the Federal Reserve and then counterfeiting it within their banks because they only need to keep 10% on deposit. So if they get $1 million, they can make $9 million out of it. Loan all that out. Because all they need is one-tenth of everything they loan out in the bank, which is the $1 million. So, therefore, if that's 10% of what's in there, then they can increase it to $9 million and loan you money that doesn't even exist, that they just made out of nothing on their ledger. But you have to pay it with real money that you earn with your sweat. And that's how they've taken over this country, is through this fraud, this banking fraud, this creation of money that doesn't even exist, and then loaning it to you and demanding that you pay them interest for it, when it's nothing but a fraudulent scam. Let's get on to something that's equally interesting. In the Daily Caller, there's an article on the ACLU's untold Stalinist heritage. Noted author Paul Kingor has unearthed declassified letters and other documents in the Soviet Comintern archives linking early leaders of the ACLU with the Communist Party. Well, I don't think that any of us would be terribly shocked by that. Didn't we already figure that out? Kingor found a May 23, 1931 letter in the archives signed by ACLU founder Roger Baldwin, another Judeo-Bolshevik, written on ACLU stationery to then American Communist Party chairman William Z. Foster, asking him to help ACLU chairman Harry Ward with his then upcoming trip to Stalin's Russia. The letter suggests Ward intended to visit the Soviet Union to find evidence from Soviet Russia that would undermine the capitalist profit motive. Baldwin wrote the letter at a time when Stalin was deporting 1.8 million Ukrainian peasants to Siberia under his policy of the forced collectivization of agriculture, which resulted in the deaths of up to 20 million Ukrainians in the 2 years that followed. The Ukrainian government considers this to have been an act of genocide. Foster was a key figure in the early years of the American Communist movement, who belonged to the ACLU's National Committee in the 1920s, according to FBI documents. You have to ask yourself, why would the FBI be looking at the ACLU's National Committee in the 1920s? Are you there to spy on Americans, FBI? Are you? And if you knew this was the case, why didn't you report on it? Why didn't you tell Americans that the ACLU was working hand-in-hand with communists and was infiltrated with communists? Did you just decide you'd let that go by? Evidently. He later wrote a book titled Toward Soviet America in 1932 and also testified under oath before Congress that he opposed American democracy. Another letter on ACLU letterhead Kingor found in the Soviet archives, dated September 2, 1932, asked the Communist Party of America for a schedule of Foster's trips around the country and offers to help keep the police at bay. It also asked for the names and addresses of Communist Party representatives in the cities where Foster was speaking. Kingor also found a flyer from 1933 advertising ACLU board member Corliss Lamont as the headline speaker for Soviet Union Day, which his organizers hoped would answer the lies and slanders of the enemies of the Soviet Union. The documents found their way into the Soviet archives because the Communist Party sent all of its correspondences to the Comintern in Moscow for safekeeping. Other documents released in the 1990s by KGB defector Vasily Mitrokhin show the American Communist Party was under the Moscow's direct control until 1989. These guys were advocating a regime that arguably was the biggest mass murderer in all of American history, in all of human history, Kingor said. Where is the moral authority in that? Kingor told the Daily Caller he found numerous other documents in the Soviet Comintern archives that also show a close relationship between the Communist Party and the American Civil Liberties Union. These documents corroborate rumors that have circulated about the ACLU's founders and early leaders dating back to the 1920s. The ACLU would not comment on Kingor's research, but the ACLU's official history describes its founders as a small group of idealists who began the organization amid the Palmer raids of late 1919 and early 1920 against so-called radicals, meaning those who immigrated to America from Russia. The problem here is what is being left out of the narrative, Kingor said. Palmer, who was Attorney General to Woodrow Wilson, the great progressive understood, as did Wilson administration, that many of these radicals were American communists who were literally devoted to the overthrow of the U.S. government and its replacement with a Soviet American republic. Isn't that interesting? I've discussed this with you over the years about the Red Bolsheviks of New York, the bankers, the New World Order people, as some people call them, the ones who are trying to start a new world that is run by Jewish communists. And the biggest secret is that the banks themselves are communists. They are the persons who have paid for the Soviet Union to take place. American communists, the story says, actually stated such things in their proclamations, documents, and flyers. And Kingor catalogs many of these in his book, Dupes. If you look at a lot of things about the ACLU's early history, you will see a lot of things that are pro-communist, Kingor said. What I'm trying to say about this group is that from the outset, it was on the farthest extremes of the left. It was atheistic. Certain members were pro-communist and would argue that the ACLU itself, in the 1920s, was pro-communist, as defined by the writings and the beliefs of its founders, key officials, and board members. Kingor, however, does not believe today's ACLU is communist, but he argues it still pushes its founders' militant atheism. Kingor said a conservative group would not receive the same sort of a pass from the press, and the left, were it to be discovered its founders had Nazi or fascist ties during the same time period. But communism? Well, what's wrong with a little communism? Especially if your presses have been toting communism for years and hiding the bad things that went on under Stalin, including mass murder, which they didn't hide when they said that was the Jews being mass murdered, did they? No, they published it to the mountaintops. Baldwin's writings and public comments, along with those of Ward, Lamont, and longtime board members, such as Elizabeth Gurley Flynn and John Dewey, show they looked to Soviet Russia for inspiration, according to Kingor. Well, if there was ever anybody that was a communist, it was John Dewey who started the National Education Association. And I should know, I'm a lifetime certified educator, and I had to read about John Dewey for years as I was getting my degree under the History and Principles of Education. It is not like they were outside of a bar and blurted out something stupid about the Soviets after a few drinks, Kingor said. These guys actually went to the Soviet Union and came back and wrote whole books gushing about the brave new world they found in the Soviet Union. But most people don't even know any of this stuff today. Of course not, because the Jews own the press and they're not going to tell on themselves. But they know. The people at the top in the presses, they know all about this, and they're hiding it from us because they're anti-American, they're pro-communist, they're pro-fascist. Baldwin was a complex figure among them because he initially sympathized with the communists in the 1920s and 30s, but later backed away after the extent of Stalin's evil became apparent. He never joined the Communist Party as a format member, but evidence shows he sympathized with the Soviet cause, Kingor said. The Red Web, a 1925 book written by Justice Department official Blair Cohen, describes Baldwin as having been a red anti-communist. And with a name like Blair Cohen, I can assume that he's probably a Jewish person that wrote the book. Probably thought he was doing them a favor. Baldwin's radicalism caught the eye of the FBI, which quoted him in a 1924 report as having said, "The right to advocate a violent revolution, assassination, and proletarian Red Guard are all clearly within the scope of free speech." Well, I think they probably are, too. After all, our presses have been talking about advocating revolutions in other parts of the world, which are stoked by the CIA and their crookedness. The ACLU founder traveled to Stalin's Russia in 1927 and wrote a book titled Liberty Under the Soviets the following year, which defended the Lenin's and Stalin's repression of dissent because they are weapons in the transition to socialism. Baldwin later repudiated what he wrote in his book as naive in the 1950s after he became an anti-communist. Do you notice that when the Jews finally were under attack for being so pro-communist, suddenly they all became devout anti-communists? You see how they can change their serpent skin so rapidly. It's a characteristic of their people that they constantly do this. When suddenly somebody puts the thumb on the soft spot in the baby's head, suddenly the baby moves. So when the Jews were found out, they immediately switched to anti-communism from pro-communism in order to save themselves. The ACLU's founder was active in numerous pro-Soviet fronts throughout the 1930s, but experienced his change of heart following the signing of the 1939 Nazi-Soviet Non-Aggression Pact, according to Robert Cottrell's biography of Baldwin. Baldwin pushed through a measure in 1940 banning open communists from being part of the ACLU's National Committee that led to Ward's resignation. Ward had served as chairman of the ACLU's board of directors since its founding in 1920. Ward, a Methodist minister, later penned a book in 1944 praising Stalin's Russia for having abolished private property and for having diminished individualism in a book entitled The Soviet Spirit. Baldwin's push to rid the ACLU of all open communists also led to Gurley Flynn's ouster in 1940 because of her open Communist Party membership. She would die in the Soviet Union and receive a Soviet state funeral. Not bad for a bureaucrat in the ACLU, right? A Soviet state funeral. Sweet. Lamont, who coincidentally was 2006 Connecticut Senate candidate Ned Lamont's uncle, clashed with Baldwin over his effort to purge the ACLU's National Committee of known communists because he believed it was a betrayal of civility. He remained on the ACLU's National Committee until 1951, when he resigned to protest being asked to take an anti-communist oath. Well, isn't that too bad? You find out that Stalin's murdered people in 1951, and you resigned rather than take an anti-communist oath. You liked that little Jewish killing of Christians in Russia, didn't you there, Lamont? What a rat. Although Lamont never formally joined the Communist Party, he was active in numerous pro-Stalin fronts throughout his ACLU tenure, such as the Friends of the Soviet Union, according to Kingor. Lamont never acknowledged the truth behind Stalin's atrocities, and his 1933 book, Russia Day by Day, which details his 1932 trip to the Soviet Union, Lamont praises Stalin's destruction of churches and glosses over the atrocities being committed against Ukraine's peasants at the time of his trip. His book also claims the communists had brought an era of happiness and that the new world of the 20th century is the Soviet Union. You see the phrase there? The new world of the 20th century, the new world order, is the Soviet Union, a banking-controlled atrocity controlled by the banks of New York that funded the revolution. Lamont later defended Stalin's show trials during the Great Purge of 1938 to 1939 and his installation of communist governments in Eastern Europe. So he defended Stalin's show trials even. What a beautiful ACLU member he was. Mr. Lamont, I salute you. Oh, it's kind of fun to pull these Jews out from under the rock where they hide, where it's dark, and flash them around in the bright sunlight for everyone to laugh at them. Kingor considers Lamont one of the worst among the ACLU's early leaders because he never repented of his support for Stalin even after the extent of his crimes became apparent. The narrative today is that they were all noble liberals and progressives, but it's never considered that they were actually pro-Soviet or pro-communist, Kingor said. These guys were terrible because they gave support to a totalitarian regime that arguably was the greatest mass murder in all of human history. So what has Kingor done here? He's outed these Jews who ran the ACLU from the beginning and showed how they were apologists for the Soviet Union and how they came about demanding that people be allowed to print pro-leftist material in America, taking these particular issues into courts to make sure that the radical Soviet philosophers in America would be able to print what they wanted. They were doing this because they were imbued with the Soviet spirit, with the Red Revolution that the Jews had all over New York. And these people have New York and Red Bolshevism and Red Communism stamped all over themselves. These were the Judeo-Bolsheviks of New York, the people that hoveled around in the ABCD streets of southern New York and where the seedbed of communism and revolt had been taking place for decades, and where the anti-American hate was expressed for the Christian nation of America that had kept the Jewish people sort of bottled up there in New York. And finally, in 1913, when the banks began to get a hold of the free honeypot of the Federal Reserve, where they could print their own money and counterfeit it, then the Jews began to really become dangerous. And it's no surprise that 1914 World War I started all of a sudden after the Jews had this free line of money. And from there, they were able to get Lenin taken to Petrograd in a sealed car, where he only had 7 people with him, because he had been overthrown and nobody wanted to hear from him. He had 7 people with $20 million brought there to Petrograd on a steamship by Leon Trotsky, who got it from the Jew Jacob Schiff, who was very pro-Soviet and anti-Christian czar and anti-Christian Russia. He sent him up there with that money. They were able to buy all the people they needed to start the revolution. Then they sent 350 Jews up there to run the country from New York. The most radical people that America was kind of happy to get rid of them, actually, because they had been nothing but trouble while they were in New York. And we had already deported many of them out of our country because of their subversiveness. And today the Jews are still extremely subversive. They have destroyed our economy, and they have received, as a result of their destruction of our economy, trillions of dollars in gifts from our government to cover their losses from their bad business decisions. Because these people are special to our government. Because our government and the bankers are joined at the hands, the head, and the feet. The free, fake, phony money that the Jewish bankers were able to get allow America to continue to have one war after another, to bribe nations and to bribe revolutionaries within countries, to unseat their monarchies, to start democracies, then when necessary to defeat the democracies, to cause an assassination of a president, and suddenly a czar of some sort, like the Shah of Iran, takes over. And then ask America to bring in 15 or 16 military bases and to use his country as a staging ground for American terror throughout the Middle East. These are the things that these Red Bolsheviks do, and that these bankers who are Red Bolsheviks do. And they don't do it to help America. They do it to help themselves and to destroy America. Because every dollar that's loaned to the bank is a dollar taken from the American economy that has to be paid back under these contracts that the Jews have written for the government. But the government doesn't care because, after all, the senators and congressmen are paid to be reelected by these same people. So that over and over again, it's like a round robin of corruption that goes around in a circle. Money from the Jews, votes for the Jews, money from the Jews, congressional votes for the Jews, everything they want, they get. And the money that goes to the donations for the campaigns of these congressmen, they get. They get the donations. The Jews get the laws that tell them that their banks don't have to pay taxes on this or taxes on that. That they get to counterfeit money 9 times and maybe even 30 times. In fact, some of these banks have done it 600 times for every dollar. And then loaned it to you for anywhere from 5% to 30%, depending on whether it was a house loan or a credit card. So how can you ever compete with these people? They own the money supply. They're able to counterfeit it free of charge and legally. And you poor non-Jewish little suckers, you are being exploited by these people. And everything you see on TV, everything you hear on radio, everything you read in the newspapers and the magazines, and every university you'll send your kids to reflect this Judeo-Bolshevik point of view that white Americans and Christians are terrible people, and that any immigrant worth his salt is worth 10 times what one white Christian American is worth. It's the same BS that the Russians got in the 1920s and 30s when the Jews were killing them there under the Jewish Bolshevik USSR and their Red Star of David on their military caps. What a slaughter. What fear, what horror, what terrorism that the Jews committed in the Soviet Union. And the same terror is being committed, really, when you think about it in a more gentle way, among our congressmen. They're all afraid to say anything against the Jews. There was a congressman named Findlay from New York who wrote about the enemy within, about the Jews, and within 2 years he was unelected because the Jews took his money away from their coffers and gave it to his opponent, and the opponent beat him, proving that he was the poster boy for how you shouldn't thwart the Jew boy with all the money in his hand that makes your service as a congressman or a senator or a president possible. And that's how they do it. They do it with their money. The easiest way to corrupt a man is not through good cooking, but just give him some bucks, and you corrupt him immediately. In places such as Kabul, Gaza, and Baghdad, unmanned aerial vehicles hovering over homes, following suspects, and tracking enemies of the state are a daily reality. So where are the high-tech drones buzzing next? Well, Miami and Dade County, Florida. The Miami Police Department is poised to become the first large metro force using drones in its aerial missions. The department finalized a deal to buy a drone called T-Hawk from defense firm Honeywell and officially applied for permission from the FAA last month to begin flying it around the county. What's not clear is how cops will sort out the raft of thorny privacy questions hovering around plans for using this powerful new eye in the sky. At this point, it doesn't really matter if you're against this technology, because it's coming, says P.W. Singer, author of Wired for War and an expert on drones. The precedent that is set in Miami could be huge. So these drones, or UAVs, have exploded in popularity over the past 5 years. And now the drones are beginning to work their way into the criminal justice system, so that you and I, once again, will be the final combatants in the war on terror, because these drones will be looking at us. They will be looking at us every day of our lives from now on. Because what we have created to defeat the fake terrorists, and there were no terrorists, that's all nothing but BS from the government, which lies all the time. They lied with the Gulf of Tonkin to get the Vietnamese War started. They lied about 9/11 to get the war on Iraq started. These people are liars. If they're with the United States and their lips are moving, you know that they're lying. Whenever the president steps forward to speak to you on a microphone, you must know that he is lying. Because that's what politicians do. That's what nations like the United States do. That's what the CIA does. These people are reading scripts filled with lies to keep you convinced that they're doing the right thing by you. But you're never going to know. You're never going to know that they're doing the right thing by you because they're never going to tell you the truth. These are the same people who have injected plutonium into the arms of little 14-year-old girls in hospitals to see what would happen to them. Well, of course, they died. What do you think would happen to you if somebody put plutonium in your arm? They're the same people who ran the GIs into a trench 1 mile from an atomic bomb test in Nevada. And as soon as the test was over, after their eyes cleared, because they had their hands over their eyes in the trench, but the rays that came through the earth from 1 mile away were so strong, they could actually, and through their closed eyes, see the bones in their hands. Yeah, their eyes were closed, but they could see the bones in their hands because of all of the gamma rays coming through the earth into them. And then the government had them walk right across Ground Zero within 10 minutes. And they said, look, we can continue a battle even after an atomic bomb is dropped on a city. And, you know, it's perfectly safe. Well, every one of those boys died within 20 years of leukemia and similar cancers. But there was no tears from the federal government. No, they were too busy at that time injecting the children of Guatemala with syphilis and studying what would happen to them, something that they've apologized for just in the last few weeks. Now, this is a country that is a lot like Adolf Hitler's Nazi Germany and Stalin's Russia, and like the warlords of Japan. We have done so many medical experiments on people, it's incredible. And we have spied on our own people for years. The FBI was spying, as I just told you, on the ACLU. Why was it doing that? What interest would the government have of spying on the ACLU, and especially if they weren't going to do anything about their involvement with the Soviet Union once they found out about it? So what would be the use of looking at these people unless they just want to know everything about everybody and to stick their nose up their rear end and just take a big sniff whenever they want to? Well, the rear end that needs to be sniffed is the rear end of the United States of America. That filthy, disgusting government that has been at war now for 100 years, with its little wussy armies that are unable to win a war, but would rather back out and stop, such as they did in World War II when their tanks were suddenly busted up when they entered into Germany and they had to let the Soviet Union bail them out. So the Soviet Union took Berlin and not the United States. Same thing in World War I. We eventually bogged down in World War I, at which time we had a treaty and Russia walked off with half of Europe. Not Russia, I'm sorry. The Soviet Union walked off with half of Europe. So what good did that war do us either? No good whatsoever. This is the United States, where complete corruption prevails, and where lies to the American people about what the government is doing prevails. Lies about the banking system, in which Jewish people who are red Bolsheviks are able to print fake phony paper money, buy up all the newspapers, all the businesses, corrupt the congressmen with money that you're going to have to pay for when they're unable to pay it back. And you just lost $4 trillion in the last few years because the banks should have gone broke but didn't, because they pay your congressmen to do their will. And their will was that they be bailed out at your expense. You poor American fools, when will you ever learn?